ladies and gentlemen, it's the Rick Emerson, the radio program. Coming up later on, Peter Carlin, Scott Daly, Film Fever Radio. Now, the real reason you are here today, your personal savior at the Ministry of Truth, Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, here's something everybody in the military wants to hear. The top U.S. Army officer in Iraq is drawing up plans to keep American troops until 2010.
Well, that's even more freedom to spread.
2010.
God damn.
Former Secretary of the Army Togo West.
What nationality is that his name? Togo?
Maybe his
name. Togo, send more troops to Iraq.
Togo West.
No, seriously, doesn't Togo... Look, I hate to engage in this kind of humor, but let's just say it. Doesn't Togo sound like the assistant to, like, the brave hero in, like, some terrible 1950s serial that they would play, like, in the theater on the weekends? Togo, quick, I need you to go scout that over that hill where all the death is happening. Come back and tell me, and I will stand here with the blonde woman.
So now they're preparing the army for future presidents, whoever they may be.
So what he's doing is making sure that the army he leaves behind is prepared to do whatever it is called upon to do, taking into account current circumstances in Iraq.
Togo clear whole dance card for next 10 years. Invade many countries.
A British man arrested 2.5 years ago said he planned to blow up the New York Stock Exchange and other financial hubs. What kind of a name is this? Dhiran Bharat.
Dhiran Bharat blow up New York Stock Exchange.
Admitted to the plots today at a London courtroom, adding he was planning a dirty bomb attack in Britain. He pled guilty to conspiracy to murder.
What's his name? Dhiran Bharat? Isn't Bharat that Ali G character? All right, good enough.
I'm not sure. Well, Steve Howard said he used to fantasize about what he'd say to Vice President or President Bush if he ever got the chance. The opportunity arrived June 16th, the same day he said he read about U.S. fatalities in Iraq reaching 2,500. So, Howard said he was taking his two kids to Beaver Creek, Colorado. This is where Mr. Cheney was making an appearance, and all of a sudden he saw the vice president there. I didn't even know he was in town, so I walked up to him and I said, "Your policies in Iraq are reprehensible," and then I walked away. But the Secret Service did not take kindly to his comment. About 10 minutes later, he came back through the mall with his 8-year-old son in tow, and he recalls at that time, the Secret Service came out of the shadows, and his exact words were, "Did you assault the Vice President?
Mr. Creedy?"
That's how Howard said he responded. "No, I didn't. I had told Mr. Cheney the way I felt about the war in Iraq." Well, the Secret Service man grabbed him and kept his hands behind his back in the presence of the 8-year-old and said, "What am I supposed to do with an 8-year-old in a public mall?" And the Secret Service man responded, "We call social services."
Where did this happen?
This happened in a mall.
But in this is...
In Colorado, Beaver Creek, Colorado.
This is in America, right?
In America, yes.
And this is because he said what? The policies are reprehensible?
"Your policies in Iraq are reprehensible." And walked away.
He was
accused of assault.
And you know, the best, and by best I mean most terrifying section of that entire story is the Secret Service man came out of the shadows. That's got to make you feel good about living here. Because that's what that scene from the movie where the guy walks home and, "Well, I'm glad to be home. A man's home is his castle, the sanctuary from..." And he opens the door and there's always the guy standing like in the shadows behind the door, and he always looks like that character actor, J.T. Walsh. Just standing there ready to cut your head off.
Now, once carted off to jail, the charges against him were reduced to harassment, and he was released on $500 bond. And the Eagle County DA's office eventually dropped that charge.
And this is for saying what? This is for saying, "I find your policies..." What is the...
No, "Your policies in Iraq are reprehensible."
"Your policies in Iraq are reprehensible?"
Mm-hmm.
"Are reprehensible."
Yes.
All right. Reprehensible. All right. Thank you. Just making a note for later. All right. 503-733-2970. This is the new news hour with Tim Riley.
So knowing it's another 2 years before we can really do anything about any of this, let's talk about Mel Gibson.
Let's have a universal shrug moment and... okay, we're going to move on.
He was on Good Morning America today being interviewed by Diane Sawyer. He was asked during the interview where his anger comes from.
"I have no idea. Just I've been angry all my life. And I try not to have it manifest itself, you know. You try and keep a lock on it. And it really isn't. It's real back there someplace."
Okay, why doesn't Mel Gibson have an accent? That's a weird thing. Does he have an accent that he turns on and off? Isn't he Australian?
Yeah, I thought he was.
I thought he was... There's no discernible accent.
I have no idea. Just, I've been angry all my life. And I try not to have it manifest itself, you know. You try and keep a lock on it. And it really isn't. It's real back there someplace.
He's probably lived in L.A.
For, you know, 20 years now.
Yeah, but John Schwarzenegger's lived here for 40 years and he still has an accent.
That's true.
I mean, maybe Madonna is borrowing his accent or something. All right. Is he a real Australian? Is he Australian or is that like his mom and dad are Australian, but like he was born in Centralia or something? Scott Savage?
Hi. He's Australian. He was born. No, wait. I take that back. I think he was born in the States and they moved to Australia and he got an Australian accent, but he started to break himself out of that when he started getting big in movies.
Oh, I see. Because otherwise it's the... All right.
Right.
Because otherwise he might have to act.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. So he's acting like he's from the States.
Okay. All right. So there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Savage. You expect more of that input and insight tomorrow when he is the guest host on this very fine radio program. Here's Jim Riley.
Gibson has asked what he would have said if the officer at the scene was black.
Maybe. I don't know.
What would you have said?
Who knows? I'd have to get loaded again and tell you, and then be in those conditions again, because it's unpredictable what's going to come flying out.
Gibson describes what type of alcoholic he is.
Happy drunk until I snap for no reason and just turn.
Okay, does he? Oh, he does. He has that Apocalyptica movie. That's what it is, or Apocalypto. Apocalyptic, whatever, Apocalyptic Mechahaniho, whatever it is, that movie that's coming out where they speak, it's all in Esperanto or something. That's why he's doing this. I was wondering what it's all about. It's because he's got that movie coming out where he's got but he's doing that thing. You can tell, the problem with the actors, as I understand, is that you can never get a real fix on them. That's the problem with, and actresses, I think, are probably even worse than actors, because actresses all try to be just so deliberately blank when they're being, and it's just a lot of, like Paul Thomas Anderson talked about this when he would interview all these porn actresses when he was prepping for Boogie Nights. And it was a lot of like, how do you feel about your mom being a crack whore and that you have to support yourself by having sex on camera for $15 a day? And, well, you know, and it's just a lot of like, it's like completely neutral, just nothing there. And that's how actors, that's why it's so frustrating to hear them interviewed like this. Who is this doing the interview?
Diane Sawyer.
Diane Sawyer. This is a hard-hitting journalism. If they had Katie Couric on this, we'd be getting some real answers. There's just nothing that, at no point are they asking anything. God, why do I even listen to these things? They just make me so furious. Because what you want is you want for someone to just, figuratively speaking, because of course violence is not a solution, but you just want someone to hold him down and just burn him with something until he answers what you want to know, which is why Jews? Why is it always Jews with this guy? And you want someone to ask him about his freak hole of a father, who says that the Holocaust was exaggerated or it was fiction, something like that. And they asked Gibson, they said, what about your dad saying that the Holocaust was fiction? He goes, well, my father never told me a lie. What the hell does that even mean? And that's one of those frustrating questions that they never ask follow-ups to in an interview. I'm sorry. This is where you really do like a Helen Thomas or somebody doing the interview.
All right. Gibson admits when he went through that night has become a blessing in disguise.
Uh-huh. I got stopped before I did any real damage to anyone else. Thank God for that. I didn't hurt myself. You know, I didn't leave my kids fatherless. That's good. That's a blessing, okay? The other thing is...
Sure, you're a positive influence on them.
Sometimes you need a cold bucket of water in the face to sort of snap to.
All right, I'm just going to move on. Going to pretend that whole interview never happens. It just makes me angry. Rick, I have questions about yesterday's plane crash. Odd things. One, the plane has dual controls. Is that true? Well, yeah. I guess all planes have dual controls, don't they?
I don't know about that.
I mean, it seems like... I mean, like a
co-pilot.
Well, like a big plane, like a 747 or whatever, they all have dual controls, I think. Two, this can't be true. His flight instructor was with him. What was he doing? Who was in control? Three, these planes have a huge parachute that carries the whole plane down easily. Why didn't they deploy it? Much more information needed. Mark. Well, we'll get to this later on. We won't do it this hour. But we have a bunch of stuff about yesterday's, about this plane crash, where they were noting, I didn't know that it was his flight instructor, though. That's his... God, it's like when he would take a traffic safety or whatever they called it at your school, the driver's ed class in high school. And I don't know how you all did it with, like, how Sarah did it. Tim, how old are you? You're like 27?
26.
So, Sarah, when you took driver's ed, was there just, what was the deal? Was there like, did they have dual controls in the car? How did they do it?
No, no, it was just a regular car. I think maybe we had brakes.
All we had, all they had was...
I don't remember.
When I took driver's ed, they just had a metal bar that went across the car. And it was a metal bar. It was not unlike that bar that they pull down on you when you're in a roller coaster. And it was on the floor of the car. And the guy could stomp on it. And it would just, it was like this real Rube Goldberg. It was really like just put together with baling wire and string. And that it would press down on the brake on my side. But that was like the whole, like if you're about to careen into a cement or fireworks factory.
I know the answer to the whole plane crash, everything.
Tim Savage in the back.
George Steinbrenner, not a happy, fun guy, right? And
yes.
he's pumped all his money into the Yankees organization, right? And so he's like, I'm building up this super team. We're going to take over the world. And they fail. They fail miserably. So what does he do? He goes back into the day of, like, the natives on the island. And he says, I demand sacrifice.
To the baseball gods.
To the baseball gods. I'm sending the virgin, the 1-month-year-old Yankee, or the 1-month-old Yankees virgin, I'm sending him into the mouth of the volcano so that we will be blessed with success next year.
Excellent. Fantastic. That's
the only answer that solves all of the questions.
And so the building is sort of the Aztec pyramid of Manhattan.
Look at it.
Just look at it.
It looks like a triangle.
It's obvious. All right, there you go. Mel Gibson, born in New York, by the way, apparently, according to Scotty J. All right, here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Time for a Darwin Watch.
Here's your Darwin Watch.
Stuff is about to go down.
Don't! I need all my cats.
Don't!
My parents won't let me use scissors.
Don't!
Another one bites the dust.
Don't!
Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
Oh, my heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
Bow.
Julian Spencer was adept at climbing trees as a young boy in the state of Jamaica.
Togo climb trees.
So when the 49-year-old Dalton man bet a buddy he could scale the tree in front of another friend's Inglewood home Monday night, he thought it was an easy $20. Instead, Spencer tumbled 15 feet to his death when the branch he crawled up broke during his quest to prove he still had what it takes. He died at Advocate Christ Medical Center in Oakland of massive head injuries.
15 feet. There you go. You, when 15 feet kills you, you no longer... Man, and I don't want to get sidetracked because this is like a double... Is this a double Darwin Watch?
It is, yeah.
This is, but I mean, everybody kind of talks about this, but it's one of those things like when the guy falls 15 feet of a tree, when you think about all of the crap that you jumped off of, when you... It really is terrifying. Your bones must be made of some weird rubberized steel when you're a child. Girls, I don't think, do this. I don't think girls... Do you ever jump off the roof of your house?
No. Not the roof.
Yeah, all the time. It's because there was...
We jump off, like, the monkey bars and stuff.
Yeah, we just didn't have... Like, there was no movie house. So we just, let's go jump off the roof. Jumping off the roof of our house, plummeting to the ground, jumping from, like, squirrel-like, from the roof to a tree, which is doubly stupid because you're leaping... I mean, I don't know how high the average, like a ranch house, how high that is, but you're leaping off the highest point into a thing that's just filled with sharp, pokey branches that are sticking right out. It's like jumping right onto a pincushion. It doesn't make any sense at all. Never mind. Don't even get me started on lawn darts. Here's the rest on it.
A man reportedly caught fire and was found dead after entering a restricted area at Clark County PUD Regulator Station. A passing motorist noticed smoke coming from the station at Northwest Pacific Highway near Northwest Tonyes Road in Clark County. The motorist stopped and found a man on fire inside the fenced area. Police and firefighters responded to the scene, but due to the danger posed by live electrical wires, had to wait 45 minutes until the power could be shut off. Investigators found a hole cut in the fence on the side facing Pacific Highway. The deceased suspect was unauthorized to be at the location and attempted to cut a live wire leading to one of the regulators carrying 7,200 volts of electricity. They believe the man was attempting to steal copper wire. Area law enforcement officers report a rise in theft of copper recently due to high prices of the metal. The thefts mostly occur in new construction areas or abandoned buildings.
That's fantastic. You know, and we often, here's the thing, as we were noting, it's like that, what's his name, that the guy in Tiger that I'm going to kill some people with his knife, and the cop, bam, one dead bastard. It's it's just sort of a self-tidying thing. It just wraps itself up with a knife, but no court costs, no jail time, no arrest, no nothing, no endless plea bargaining down. And we often use the phrase self-cleaning oven on the show to describe criminals whose own apparent lack of mental faculties results in their early departure from this plane. And that really, this is really not just figuratively a self-cleaning oven. Well, he was on fire, right?
Yes.
Yeah, literally a self-cleaning oven of crime. There you go, kids. So if you really must be a criminal, try to follow the example of this fine, upstanding, and now ash-like young man. There you go. There's your Darwin watch. Back after this, Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
Another one bites the dust.
Program. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970, and so forth. Coming up later on, we'll talk to Scott Daly, FilmFeverRadio.com, Peter Carlin for the Oregonian, etc., so on and so forth. A few minutes, we'll have Tim Riley back for the Ministry of Truth. It's 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's Rick@RickEmerson.com. Rick@RickEmerson.com. From New York City, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. How are you, sir?
I'm great, thank you.
So what is it now? Is it opposite day or something? Why are you in New York City? Not that we don't enjoy talking to you, because we do.
I realize that. It is odd, because yesterday you were talking to me. That was probably just before that live shot was the last time I had about 10 minutes of sleep. But it was really amazing, because Gary has got a medical issue he's taking care of, and... Okay. So they decided that they were going to send me up. So here I am. I'll talk to you, and a short time later, there I am. I am on a plane.
You know, I mean, the thing about CNN is this is part of the cool romantic appeal of working in news like you're doing. And I don't mean that in an Eddie Haskell sort of way. It is kind of cool that you know what you guys are like. You guys are sort of like Indiana Jones.
You're right.
Am I thinking of Raiders or am I thinking of Last Crusade? It's one of those, but it's where literally it's like it's Raiders, where he gets like 5 minutes notice and then they cut to like him and the the guy, not Dimitri. Why is this happening?
I can't think here.
Marcus. They cut to him and Marcus inside his house, and Indy's like opening the suitcase, and he's like throwing in the gun and the, yes, you know, and the bullwhip, and he's like, I got to be on a plane to Damascus in 2 minutes. And that's kind of what it is with, you know, with you guys, man. They just call you, and they're like, Ed, get on a plane. You're going to Boulder. So here you are in New York talking about this plane crash yesterday. And
exactly.
All right, well, let's set some things straight, because we were covering this as it broke yesterday and getting a lot of our information straight from y'all at CNN, and a lot of it sort of unconfirmed or at least conflicting. Lisa Goddard at one point said that NORAD had scrambled jets, and then Baumgarten said that wasn't the case, and nobody really seems to know. So, first of all, so it was two people that died in this? It was Corey Lytle and the other guy in the plane and nobody else? Is that what happened?
That is correct.
All right.
That is correct.
So there was there just nobody at home in the apartment that they hit? Did they hit an apartment or was it a business on that floor?
They did have two people in the apartment, and I think one person was slightly burned on that. As you could imagine, if you're just sitting there and something comes through your window like that, all of a sudden, you know, big hunks of metal and flame.
Yeah, it's a bad day.
But they got out. They got out alive, and they got into the... went out into the hallway, and there was an orderly evacuation. And if I sound like I'm rambling, it probably is, because it was hell flight last night coming down. There was, first of all, we had tornado warnings south of Atlanta, so that's great always when you go to an airport. And then it was all the way, and then they were circling Richmond last night for about an hour and a half before coming into LaGuardia. If you've never gone into LaGuardia, that's an experience. There's virtually no runway.
I have, actually. I have done that.
Thump, thump.
Yeah. No, Well, and of course, it was just saying the last 24 hours, how much sleep have you really had in a row? None, I would imagine. So
zero.
Yeah.
Zero. Sorry, I'm sorry. Excuse me if I'm rambling.
Anyway,
to get back to this, I was out this morning very early, and, you know, that basically NTSB was out there, and everybody is just doing their thing now. It's just an amazing city. You know, how we talk about New Orleans and some of the dysfunctionality of that city. When you come to New York, it's got a beat to it. I mean, these people, I mean, it was an area that was just completely closed and locked off yesterday. And this morning, boom, people are out walking their dogs. They're heading to work. Sanitation workers are out. The cabbies are out. The cops are out. You know, ambulances, everything. The whole ball of wax. People walking to work. And it's just an amazing place, this mix in Upper East Side of Manhattan where I am. And it just blows you away. When you see that, how resilient these people are, because yesterday, I mean, quite frankly, you know, they were scared out of their wits.
Oh, it's true. Well, not that you're going to rehash the whole thing, but yeah, we were talking about this yesterday. As soon as you hear, like, plane, New York, crash, fire, building, everybody just kind of, you kind of simultaneously sigh and then just sort of kind of stand up and sort of gird yourself for, like, God, here we go again. And, you know, I'm glad it wasn't the case. Let me ask you a couple questions. We have heard, now I don't know if this is true, but again, it hadn't really been established yet. I heard that Corey Lytle wasn't actually even, authorized or adequately trained, that he wasn't even licensed to be flying the plane yesterday the way he was.
Well, that is not exactly true, and I'll tell you why. Because in doing a little research on this thing, and there's some documentary that was done by a Philadelphia television station. Now, if you see that, and you watch this guy, and they want to fly in with this guy, he's pretty sharp. He was pretty sharp and knew what he was doing, kept very, very strict attention to the instrumentation on the plane. And he seemed like, you know, one of those guys. It wasn't one of these goofy guys that, oh yeah, I just want to go flying, and you know, and he's an airhead. He's really a pretty sharp guy. Yeah, he really had his stuff together.
So that wasn't like a JFK Jr. thing, where the plane Spain just—it's got a wheel, doesn't it? And just where he just thinks he can do it.
Yeah. Horizon coming up.
Yeah.
I really think Corey Lytle. I would give him a lot of credit after what I saw. In that little documentary, that little mini doc, it was very, very good, and he really had a passion for this thing. So I think he really wanted to do things right. Plus, here's another thing I found out: the Yankees have a stipulation that if you play for them and you pilot a plane, you'd better have an instructor with you.
Right. Well, that's the other question: Was there an instructor in the plane? And if so, was it the plane that went bad? Because it seems like there's an instructor there. That's like the reason he's there, is to kick you out of the way and grab the stick, right?
Exactly. But we just don't know what went wrong at this point.
Right.
And NTSB, I'm not glossing over this because there's a lot they have to do. They're this morning and this afternoon. They're going to be there all day. And what they're doing is they're going, getting every piece and logging where it is, and then they have to pick it up. They have to try to figure this whole thing out. Plus, the engine ended up in the apartment
in somebody's
on the 40th floor.
Living room, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, they've got to go through this. They're also in the process of interviewing pilots who were in the area yesterday. And I got to tell you, this weather was bad because this was the start of it. If you remember when all this was hitting and, you know, we were watching it on TV, you and I, and you could see it was raining heavily. It started in the afternoon later on. But earlier there was that low cloud ceiling, and it was, I'm not going to blame that on this crash. I think something, quite honestly, mechanically happened, and NTSB's also talking to the engine manufacturer of this plane to see if perhaps there might have been some problems.
That's one of those things that's going to be piecing it together forever. All right. Well, my friend, have yourself some caffeine. Enjoy the rest of your day in New York City, and travel safe back to Atlanta.
I'm ready to try that new Coke product, Black.
I would suggest some kind of Coke to keep you away today, my friend. You do sound a little grog-tastic. Flawless as always.
A little cafe, Think of that leaving with sugar in the room in the morning tomorrow. What do you think, guys?
You say, only because I know you as I do. Can I see just that? We can detect just the slightest blurring around the edges, my friend. But you are a professional broadcaster, as is expected of you, my friend. So enjoy your trip back to Atlanta, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Thank you, Rick. Bye-bye.
Thank you. CNN radio correspondent. CNN radio. Boy, that guy was... He just sounded hosed.
I feel for him.
He really sounded drunk. I was lying to Ed McCarthy right now when I said, hey, he sounded a little groggy around the edges. He sounded really loaded is what he sounded.
He's still on...
He's talking to Scotty.
Okay.
I hope not. Ed, you sounded drunk. Hold on. Well, anyway, Rick, let me talk to you. It's just going on and on about the plane. God damn. All right, there you go. You know, that reminds me of, if you've ever seen the... did you ever watch that Live from Baghdad, you damn woman that I gave you?
No, I haven't.
I lent you out of my personal collection.
I watched like the... You burned it.
I burned it. I
watched like the first hour of it.
Just watch my purloined movie that I... It's a fantastic film.
No,
anyway.
And then I discovered Scrubs, and then I couldn't break myself away from it. And now I have all the Sex and the City ones.
So. I'm moving on. The point is... who is this? Oh, is this coming? All right. All right. For the love of God, it's too many things, as Julianne Moore would say. Scott Daly, FilmFeverRadio.com. What's up, brother?
Rick Emerson, how are you, sir?
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I make this really short, but I understand you're getting a transplant of some sort this weekend.
Yes, I'm having a third kidney put in.
Very good. Well,
I got the medical hair restoration happening. This time tomorrow, I'm going to be strapped in a chair, Clockwork Orange style, and the guy is going to be doing a thing. And then that's a whole lot of hat wearing for me. That's a whole lot of hat wearing and scabbing over.
You know what? That's going to make next week's bachelor party for Aaron so much fun.
Oh, God. Is that next week?
Yeah, dude.
All right. God damn. Well, can let me ask you a favor. It's 12:41. Yeah. Can we get you back on later today?
Dude, anytime.
Today's show is veering dangerously out of control, and I got to get the news that we're back on track.
Wait till next week, dude. I'm really close.
No, because we can't talk next week because it'll be too late. I got to ask about the bachelor party.
Okay.
So I'm going to put you on. We'll get in touch with you, like, I don't know, maybe an hour from now.
That's fine, man.
It's not like you're working. All right, thank you. There you go.
I'm flexible.
Thank you, sir. All right,
no problem.
Scott Daly. All right. In mere seconds, we'll be rejoined by Tim Riley from the Ministry of Truth. I'll be back here in a second. But in Live from Baghdad, this is a great moment that they reenact because it's all about the CNN guys who were covering the first Gulf War, and they're in this hotel room in Kuwait, and they're watching the attack happening, and they're the only journalist left because everybody else has been kicked out of the country or has fled. And so they're there, and... They're watching it, and Bernard Shaw, who went on to have a long and very storied career at CNN, he's awake for like 72 hours or something, just being shelled. There's a barrage of whatever, and he's there. And at one point, there was this famous moment that happened on CNN, which they recreate in the film, where he's just so delirious that he begins just going on and on about ham sandwiches for no reason. And it was a lot of, so we're here at the hotel in Kuwait. Normally, I'd be having a ham sandwich right now. A little sourdough. Some cream cheese. And he's like on, and he's broadcasting around the world. Like 4 billion people, because they were the only people there. So, anyway. Let's get to Stan and then Tim Riley. We'll be back in here. Stan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, brother?
You were right on with Togo as the evil assistant. There's a movie from the 60s, I believe, called Manos, Hands of
Fate. Manos, the Hands of Fate.
That's it.
Yeah, Manos, everybody knows Manos, Hands of Fate.
And it was on, I saw it on Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, yeah, well, that's where everybody saw it. Anybody who tries to tell you that they saw Manos, Hands of Fate, like somewhere else, is trying to be a little too hip for the room. No one saw that anywhere.
Well, the Manos dude, his evil assistant was named Togo.
Really? No, are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you, dude.
I haven't seen, it's been a couple years since I've seen Manos, the Hands of, as Tom Servo would say, once again, ladies and gentlemen, Manos, Hands of Fate.
So maybe you had that as a...
maybe it's lurking. It was lurking in my subconscious.
Yes, it was.
I think it was Togor.
Togor.
Yeah.
Togor.
Yeah.
All right.
Because they wanted to use Igor. And for some reason at the end, they... by the way, did you know that like three people killed themselves after the movie's premiere?
Well, seriously, wouldn't you?
Including Togor.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's like that guy, it's like that movie Attack of the Moon People or something, and then it was also titled, like, They Came From Beyond. There was some movie that came out, it was like three, it was so bad, they couldn't even figure out where the aliens came from. It was alternately titled, like, Creatures from the Moon, Creatures from Mars, They Came From Beyond, Creatures, and the creature consists of a guy in a gorilla suit, with a television over his head with no glass in the front. Literally, it's like they took an old 50s TV, knocked out the glass, guy has a gorilla suit and then a TV on his head. And then, like, the night of the premiere, they found the guy in the back, like, with a broken bottle. Like, I gotta end it all! You know, it's like, it's totally, just terrible. All right, thank you, Stan.
You're welcome, bud.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now welcome back to the Rick Emerson Show. Walking as we speak from the newsroom, striding purposefully towards the studio, his every step bringing him one step closer to broadcast greatness for the Ministry of Truth, your personal savior, a man, a legend, Tim Riley.
All right, well, the president made another speech today, and he's warning about complacency.
It's just catching everyone's
eye.
Oh,
that's totally me. They were
supposed to be in B's.
They were loaded correctly, and then I was showing Tim Savage about how to load them, and I reloaded them incorrectly. That's my fault.
So the president is talking about how the fact that we used just too much oil.
I still stand by my prediction. We have a Republican speaker and a Republican leader of the Senate.
Oh, I wonder what the Vegas... There's got to be a Vegas line on the election. Somebody find that out. Somebody out there, find out the Vegas line on the election. There's got to be one. They bet on everything, don't they?
And in the meantime, Bush was heckled by an audience member.
Oh, fantastic.
Denny's very credible as far as I'm concerned. He's done a fine job as speaker. And
heck of a job,
he stands
Brian.
Up and says, I want to know the truth. And I believe yesterday he said that if somebody on his staff, you know, didn't tell him the truth, they're gone. I respect that and appreciate that and believe him.
That is strange because that is the wrong cut.
That is completely the wrong cut. What is the name of the cut?
It is Energy 1012 Bush 6.
Oh, that's Energy 1011 Bush 6. Let me find this really quickly.
Okay, it's
Energy or Election?
Energy 1012 Bush 6.
Energy 1012 Bush 6. Here we go. This is Bush being heckled?
Yes.
All right, this is...
They're talking about...
Oh, there we go.
Since 2003, my administration has made hydrogen and fuel cell technology a priority.
You know, we keep going back to, I don't think it's because I'm a Gen Xer either, but obviously I'm not a Democrat, but I'm not as Eddie Vedder would say, not a Republican neither. I keep going back to Reagan, man, and it's like you cannot, and that's the thing, it's like if we on this show are constantly contrasting George W. Bush with Ronald Reagan, imagine how painful it's got to be a Republican. And just like when you look, you know, it's like when, I don't know, it's like when you dump your girlfriend, you know, and then you hook up with somebody later on, it's you know, and you find out later on that she's got this scabies and a false leg. You know, and her hair comes off the first time you have sex, and you're thinking, God, remember when I had that girlfriend who had real hair and didn't have a peg leg? Okay, an example like that, but one that makes more sense. But the Republicans have got to sit back there and just, they've got to think, the Reagan era is like porn for Republicans, you know what I mean? It's like they just, it's like looking back at photos of you back when, you know, back with your old girlfriend, like, oh, those were good times. Because... Reagan just never got Reagan never got thrown by anything. He never got caught off guard by anything. Wasn't it when Sam Donaldson was giving him some crap and Reagan called him a son of a bitch? Right? There wasn't that Sam Donaldson that did that?
It's
like Reagan was getting on whatever that helicopter is that has the blades on both ends, Air Force Two or whatever, Navy One, whatever the hell they call that. And Reagan was getting on the plane, and Sam Donaldson's doing that thing where his eyebrows are getting all pointy, and he's waving his pencil. He's saying, Mr. President, one more thing. And Reagan just turned around and said, yeah, you son of a bitch, and got back on the plane. It's great. It's fantastic. He just made profanity like so much golden nectar-like poetry dripping from his political lips. And Bush didn't do that. Bush just sits there and blinks sort of stupidly like a reptile at a herpetology exhibit, just kind of, you know, just kind of flustered like a not terribly bright puppy. Is Tim Riley.
Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger on the Tonight Show with David Letterman said he is a far cry from President Bush politically, as he was from winning an Academy Award throughout his career in movies.
To link me to George Bush is like linking me to an Oscar Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's ridiculous.
Wow. He's still got it.
He said, unlike in Washington, he gets things done in California.
We work together here. Mm-hmm. We make great decisions, and we're moving really the agenda forward. I think that this state is doing extraordinarily well with that, with the way both of the parties work together, unlike Washington, where really nothing gets much done at all. And so, which is really a sad story.
And things of this nature. And fat cats. Let's not forget fat cats. All right, here's the thing. You know that he is really the canary in the coal mine here, too. You know, when Schwarzenegger is distancing, and Schwarzenegger, this is like when they were doing with the Republican National, when they were having the convention in 2004, and the three speakers that they were bringing out, who were Giuliani, McCain, and Schwarzenegger, all three of them were pro-gay rights, pro-abortion, or pro-choice, anyway. They were all, I mean, you got all kinds of, they were all for varying degrees of affirmative action. So there's all of this splintering kind of going on within the Republican Party anyway. But
to link me to George Bush is like linking me to an Oscar. Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know.
But I mean, the fact that Schwarzenegger, who panders to that right-wing macho demographic more than anybody in the country, probably except Giuliani himself, the fact that he's distancing himself from George W. Bush, man, it's a bad, bad bellwether, Karl Rove. It's a bad juju coming down. Here's Tim Riley.
A bathroom gadget that helps guys hit the target after a few too many has gone on sale and is sweeping across the U.S. This, according to the Mirror in Britain. This is called the Johnny Light. It is placed under the toilet seat and illuminates the bowl with a green glow. Inventor Bill Ford said it'll improve men's aim and disturb others less when there's no need to put the light on.
Disturb others less? Oh, you mean because of the light? I thought you meant if you're the guy. Because they don't really need this at home. Where they need this is in bars. Because we've all... I don't wish to be crude. I don't wish to traffic in any sort of blue or toilet humor. But every guy has had this experience where you're at a bar... There, and it's like the side by side, not like the stalls up against the wall, but like the, you know, the toilets against the wall, but the stalls where there's a guy. Maybe the urinals against the wall are all busy, so a guy will go into a stall to do the stand up business, and you're there too, and then you don't want to notice this, but you do, that the guy in the stall next to you is very clearly not on target. He's not on task, as they used to say to me in high school. And you don't want to notice that, but you do, and it's horrifying. And, of course, men, especially if it's a public bathroom, men can't bring themselves to sit down on the toilet, especially if it's some sort of really seedy dive. I do not put my faith... Look, they tell you even condoms don't protect you against crap. Now, I do not put my faith in that tiny little piece of perforated porous paper that you bring off the back of the toilet, especially because it's just been sitting there all month for some drunk to screw with. So that's where they really need that, is in public. It's a bad scene. Let me just say this real quickly. When I was a child growing up, they actually sold at a store near my home. And it wasn't this. It wasn't the green light. But they actually marketed. They actually marketed, I swear to God, another thing that you can be glad here in this room that we will never have to deal with because we're not parents and we don't plan to be. They actually sold small, floating, toy-like toilet targets for your child. To toilet train your child with. Imagine having to go into the store as a parent and buy something to put in the toilet for your child to aim at while using the bathroom. It indicates all kinds of things about you and your child. Let's do one more and then we will break. We'll come back to top of the hour.
Well, actress Tara Reid, whose botched breast surgery made her a Hollywood laughingstock 2 years ago, underwent additional surgery to repair the damage. The American Pie actress tells Us Weekly she had surgery last month to reduce the scarring on her breast and to even out her stomach after cosmetic surgery in 2004.
Even out my stomach.
She unwittingly exposed the disastrous results when she posed her pictures at a November 2004 party and her dress strap fell down.
Posed. Is that what they call that now? When you're listing like 40 degrees to port in one of your bosoms just flopping out like a trout on a riverbank? That's not really posing for pictures. That's I'm unable to stand and a guy from Page Six happened to be there. And this. Let's also talk about some other... Do you have that story, the Tara Reid story? Did you just chuck that already?
I did.
There's a man. Okay, but yeah, I've got it all in memory. It's all here. It's up here in the steel trap. You're talking about several things. A, first of all, it does make one a little uneasy about plastic surgery, because if you're Tara Reid, who, I mean, is not like independently wealthy, but is a Hollywood celebrity and has, I would imagine, a fair amount of money. If you can't get decent plastic surgery and you know, at that time you were a very successful Hollywood star, you know, that'll make you think twice about going in to get anything shrunken or enlarged on your body, you know what I mean? Secondly, the fact that that you have to even out your stomach, because the phrase that they used in that article about Tara Reid is exactly the phrase that Sarah used when she came into my office one morning, because I was sitting there on the computer, and I said, like, hey, have you heard about Tara Reid? And Sarah's like, oh, yeah, I saw that. We were talking about how she's getting the botching taken away. And Sarah's response was, yeah, because what did you say? Because her stomach was all lumpy and something. It was lumpy.
No, I think just lumpy.
And Tara Reid used the phrase lumpy and ripply. Her stomach was all ripply. Because apparently she said that she wanted a six pack. And she wanted to skip the whole bothersome exercise business. And so she just had the guy like that guy from Action. That Dachi does still, I remove all fat in 5 minutes, you know. It hurt like hell. You look hot. And just sucked it all out. Stomach uneven and ripply. And then, like, with the bad, where it really was like that one of her bosoms had been used for some sort of,
chew toy?
No. For some sort of, fleshy pin the tail on the donkey kind of game. You know what I mean? Where maybe, you know, like maybe the depth perception of the doctor was not all that it might be in an ideal world. And she looked. And the other sad thing there is that they're what year is this? 2006, and they're still referring to her as the American Pie actress. And I never saw any of the sequels. I only ever saw the first one, so I don't know if she's in any of the American Pie sequels. But I mean, there does come an expiration date after which, if you have not gotten something. You know what I mean? It's like that pencil turns to ink after a while. And if you have not added something to your resume, your resume is what it is. And then you fast forward and you're having something unpleasant applied to you by Dustin Diamond. You know what I mean? So you don't want to, you don't want that to happen, kids. All right. Well, let's take a break here. We will come back. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Take a break. Coming up later on, Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com will join us. We have Jim Roop, who's going to be with us later on. Peter Carlin from The Oregonian as well. Don't forget, I'm gone tomorrow. Tim Savage from the Thymnasium tomorrow, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Oh, coming up today, we got to give away those Star Wars Omzi passes as well. Don't go anywhere. Here's Fast the Pussycat. The Rick Emerson Show. You sit down.